Well, 2009 is the 400th anniversary of Galileo's making and using a telescope to study the night sky for the first time. And earlier the next year, he wrote a book about his early observations. It's called The Starry Messenger. And that really changed the Western world immensely. The United Nations and the International Astronomical Union have designated 2009 as the International Year of Astronomy to commemorate Galileo's work. And one of the projects is the Galileo Scope. It's an inexpensive telescope kit that could be used by hopefully a million people around the world to get an idea of what Galileo saw and more. We'll talk about the Galileo Scope today and telescopes and the Perseid meteor shower, which is coming up the nights of August 11th and 12th, so it's only 5-6 days away now, with Paul Kinzer of Galesville, Wisconsin. He's been with us several times, actually. He's an amateur astronomer, but he knows a lot. He owns a small business called Seeing Stars. He brings a portable planetarium to schools and libraries to share the night sky during the day and is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's published by Cambridge University Press. I'm really pleased to have him back to be with us today. You may have a question or comment about the meteor shower, about telescopes, or about the Galileo scope. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Paul, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be here.
I don't know, it's about 2-3 months ago at least, I sent a check for $20 in for a Galileo scope, and frankly, I kind of forgot about it. Lo and behold, within the last week, it arrived at my doorstep. And over the weekend, I started putting it together, but my fingers are kind of
mine too. Very little lenses.
So I had a little trouble with the lenses, but really we got it. My wife, who has much smaller fingers and is more dexterous than I am, finished that part of it, and we put it together, and it's a lot of fun.
It is, and that was one of the goals of the Galileo Scope project, was to make it something not only that would show you things in the night sky that Galileo saw, but to give you the ability to put it together yourself and to see, you know, just how a telescope works.
I found the directions a little bit lacking. And as a matter of fact, Jim Lattice from the UW Space Place, they've published a little addendum to that to make the instructions a little easier to follow. And I wish I'd had those when I put mine together.
And if you do get one and you go to the Galileo Scope website, they also have some excellent instructions. It was disappointing to me, too, because, you know, one of the goals was to get these scopes to people who couldn't afford a more expensive scope. And, you know, those people might not have access to the internet. And I found in the instructions, if they had only added just a couple of drawings and a few more sentences of explanation, then it could have been done. But frankly, it was not possible to do it correctly without going online. There were a couple of little pieces missing. And, you know, you could guess, but you wouldn't know if you had guessed right.
Well, we must have guessed right because I took it out and I didn't have it on a fixed stand at that point. But we have a place out we live on the lake and have a little boat hoist there, and I leaned it up against the boat hoist and took a look at the moon, and oh my goodness.
Right. And again, I was in contact with one of the designers of the scope, Dr. Stephen Pompey, who's big in the International Year of Astronomy, and he works at the observatory at Kitt Peak in Arizona. And he said, and this is on their website too, that they wanted to show people what Galileo saw. And in fact, it shows you what Galileo saw and shows you a lot better. One of the interesting things to me is it comes with three different ways to put the eyepieces together. You can magnify things 25 times, 50 times, or you can arrange the two smaller plastic lenses in a way to show you things much closer to the way Galileo saw them. It magnifies 17, 18 times. Mm-hmm. But it's not a very nice view. It's a very narrow angle of view. And I haven't even done it yet because I've read that it's not pleasant. But it would show you historically just how good Galileo was at observing, that he was able to see what he saw through a pretty tough scope. Really, one of the very first astronomical telescope. He ground his own lenses. He figured out from a design of a spyglass that magnified a little bit, he figured out how to make a more powerful telescope. And
amazing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it sure is.
John in Cumberland is up. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I would like to recommend that the Galileo scope to anybody. I just got one. I ordered it, as you did, about a month ago and forgot about it, and then here it shows up. I got it for my grandkids, it's really fun. It's fairly easy to put together, but I agree with you. If you have big fingers, you might need some help. The lenses are small. I guess the question for your guest is, I have a real problem focusing mine because the focus tube is so hard to move. And I wonder, am I supposed to lubricate that, or is there a way of loosening it up? Because to actually slide it in and out, it almost, you know, it really jars things and I lose the image.
Yeah,
that is one of the trade-offs they had to make. The focuser just slides in and out. Most astronomical telescopes have some knobs for turning it in and out. And there's a website called Cloudy Nights and com or net, I'm not sure. But if there are people there talking about all sorts of their hyper-tuning, they call it their Galileo scopes. And some people have talked about lubricating that focuser. It does require a pretty sturdy mount to see things at the magnifications that the Galileo scope gives you. That, you know, it doesn't come with a mount, it doesn't come with a tripod. So, yes, that is a frustration with it. At this point, I don't think I'm going to try lubricating it just because I don't want to get any of that on the lenses. It isn't easy, though. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call, John. Yeah, mine, well, I slid it back and forth several times, and I sort of gotten it. You're just using it a little bit?
Yes, and what I have found, too, is turning it while twisting it really makes for a smoother in and out, too, turning it while you twist it, almost like screwing it in and out.
Yeah.
And there's something I'd like to say that I just found out yesterday at the Galileo website. On Monday, August 10th, the price goes up.
Yes.
It goes from $15 to $20, still an amazingly good deal, but if folks are interested, they have a few days to still get it for $15.
Yeah, and I couldn't remember. I thought I paid $20, but maybe.
With shipping, that's not including the shipping cost.
Yeah, I think it was around $20 of the shipping.
And here in Wisconsin, because it is being distributed from Wisconsin, we also need to pay state sales tax on it. So,
and the fact that it's made here in Wisconsin.
So. Well, it's actually made in China. It's made in China, but it's a company in Racine is the distributor of it.
Okay, so that's how it works. Doug in Mount Horeb, we're on to you now. Hi, Doug.
Hi, great program. I'd like to put in a plug for the International Dark Sky Association. Their website is ida.org. You can get all kinds of information from them on how to keep the night sky dark and how to keep the stars out at night. They have model ordinances. They have links to dark sky lighting fixtures and... there's also another organization called StarryNightLights.com. They have a web-based light catalog, which has all kinds of decorative and commercial dark sky fixtures that make the light shine down instead of up in the sky so you can still see the stars. Madison Lighting carries a 300-fixture catalog now of dark sky lights. And here in Dane County, the town of Perry has just passed Wisconsin's first townwide 36-square-mile dark sky ordinance requiring all new lighting fixtures installed in the town to be dark sky compliant. And if anybody wants more information about any of that stuff, they can email me at darksky@madisongroup.us.
Argot.us. And we'll talk some more about that in just a couple of minutes. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest today, Paul Kinzer, here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Paul Kinzer of Galesville, Wisconsin, amateur astronomer who's written a wonderful book called Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, published by Cambridge University Press. And he owns a small business called Seeing Stars, brings a portable planetarium to schools and libraries to share the night sky during the day. We're visiting with him about the Galileo scope and the Perseid meteor shower, among other things. Lots going on, really. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And I want to give Daniel in Rice Lake a chance. Daniel?
Hello.
Hi.
How did Galileo look at the sun with his telescope? Is that why he later went blind?
I just recently read a story about that. No, it isn't. He went blind decades after he looked at the sun. He did it the way a lot of folks do. He projected an image. He aimed a telescope at the sun, and he put a piece of paper, a tile, I'm not sure, behind it, and an image was projected onto it that showed him the sunspots. So no, he did. He was smart enough to know that that would be a bad idea. Also, it's kind of interesting to me that the sunspot record that we have goes all the way back to Galileo, and we've people with telescopes have been observing the sunspots ever since 400 years ago.
And one of the things I noticed on the Galileo scope, or on the box and on the directions and all that, is do not point this at the sun. Do not try to look at the sun through this scope.
Yeah, and there was a lot of thought that went into, well, what are we going to do? We're going to be giving, you know, sending out these inexpensive scopes to a million people, maybe. I know it's about 100 and some thousand so far. And they worried, we don't want it coming back. Well, 80 people went blind from looking at the sun. So it comes with a sticker to put on the telescope. And yes, you never want to look at the sun with your naked eye. So you, of course, don't want to magnify the view by looking at it through a telescope.
And you are involved in there are a few things I want to talk with you about. One is astronomy clubs, and you're involved in a club, but astronomy clubs in general are kind of great organizations.
Yeah, if you're interested in astronomy and you just, like I felt probably 15 years ago, clueless as to where to really get into it, most areas with a fair population, they'll have some kind of astronomy club, often associated with a college, but not always. I'm a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society. There's a new club in Winona, not far from where I live, the Winona State University Astronomy Club. And you can go online, and if I remember right, astroleague.org, A-S-T-R-O-L-E-A-G-U-E, one word, astroleague.org. Is sort of it's the Astronomical Union here in the United States, and it's sort of like a consortium of astronomy clubs, and you can just put in your location, it'll tell you where the nearest clubs are. And there are a lot of them here in Wisconsin, and many of them have their own observatories. They all have people who care enough about astronomy to want to get together and talk about it, and we're always willing to really help people get involved. It's something most of us who are into it enough to be in a club are passionate about and want to share with. And in fact, my club, we are just starting at a new meeting space. It's the brand new Eco Center at Myrick Hickson Park in La Crosse.
Cool.
And yeah, and we meet every first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. So if people want to find out more, they can go to our website, which is www.laxastro.org. To find out more, and we have public viewing events, and we will bring telescopes for other people to look through, and it'll give you an idea of, well, is this maybe what I want? Maybe I don't want a scope. Maybe I want to just do binocular astronomy. A lot of expertise, you know. And I've been doing this for a while, but every time I go, I learn something new.
And you, as a matter of fact, you mentioned events, and we're talking about some of the events. You're going to be at an event relating to the Perseid meteor shower.
Yeah, I just found out about this a couple of days ago and made some contacts. Dr. Jennifer Anderson and the Winona State University Astronomy Club at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, August 11th, are going to be meeting at the Trempealeau National Wildlife Refuge, which is along the Mississippi River between Winona and La Crosse. They're going to be bringing a couple of telescopes. I'm going to be bringing a couple. We just had our meeting of my club last night. A couple of guys there say they may well come with some scopes. But the thing about the Perseids is you don't want to look through a telescope to see meteors. Meteors flash across a big chunk of sky. All you need is your eyes.
Yeah.
And the Trempealeau National Wildlife Refuge, there are no lights. They are usually not open at night, so there will be no street lights, and you're a couple of miles from any farms. So the sky should be pretty dark, and the Perseids do peak on that night of the 11th. Dr. Anderson asks that people tweet her after 5 p.m. on Tuesday just to check to make sure it's going to happen. Because, of course, if it's cloudy or rainy, it'll be canceled, and then it'll go on the next night.
Mm-hmm.
And that place to go is twitter.com/WSU Astronomy.
WSU Astronomy.
Yeah, if you just go to that, it'll tell you after 5 p.m. yes, it's a go, or no, we'll try again tomorrow night.
And the Perseids are a great sight.
They are. It's great that it's right in the middle of summer. And this year, unfortunately, at about 10:30, the moon, almost at last quarter, is going to rise at about 10:30. And it will wash out the light of the dimmer meteors. But this year, the prediction is that it's going to be a pretty good show, up to 200 meteors an hour. Some of them will be bright enough to see even with the moon in the sky. And of course, between the time it gets dark and 10:30, really the moon won't be high enough to cause too much damage till around 11. We'll hope that it's a nice show.
All right. And the best night is the 11th, you said?
The 11th. But the 12th will be fine. In fact, the shower is going on now. People have seen a few bright ones, and it's just going to peak on those nights.
Let's go to Tom in Madison next. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I just wanted to ask which portable planetarium do you prefer? There's a number of ones available retail, and I wanted to pick one up for my daughter.
Well, I don't really know about the kind that you would want to pick up for your daughter enough to recommend one. The one I own is called a Starlab Portable Planetarium, and it costs tens of thousands of dollars. So it's the size of a room. It's 16 feet across and 10 and a half feet high. So that's the one I know. And frankly, I didn't buy it new because I don't have that kind of money either. So I'm sorry, I can't really help with that.
Maybe somebody else has some ideas about a portable planetarium. Give us a call if you have a suggestion, or with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'd love to hear from you. And if you've got a suggestion on a portable planetarium or just a question, as we talk about the Galileo scope and the Perseid meteor shower and other things going on in the sky, we'd love to hear from you. talk@wpr.org, 1-800-642-1234. And speaking, you mentioned the moon causing some problems relating to the Perseid meteor shower, but there's also another viewing opportunity relating to Jupiter and the moon.
Yeah, tonight the full moon will rise around 9 p.m., and very nearby will be Jupiter. If you see the moon, the thing to the lower right, the bright star, is the planet Jupiter. So when you know, it's pretty easy to find the moon, and now tonight you won't need to wonder where is Jupiter. It'll be right there. And you can look at it with a pair of binoculars, just regular, say, a 7-power binoculars, you can see 4 of the moons of Jupiter. You'll want to hold the binoculars very steady. The moons won't be very bright, but there they'll be. And I'm not sure, you might only see 2 or 3 because sometimes they go in front of or behind Jupiter.
But you'll get a good look if you happen to have the Galileo scope.
Oh, yes. You can see them clearly. I took it out and I looked at Jupiter. The moons are bright little points, and I could actually see a couple of the belts on Jupiter. It was a nice little round ball.
What about, someone said, well, you should be able to see the rings of Saturn with the Galileo scope.
Yeah. Judging by my look at Jupiter, I would say you certainly could. Unfortunately, Saturn right now is very close to the sun in the sky, and it isn't out in the evenings. And even if it were, we're at a point in Saturn's orbit. It takes 30 years to go around the sun. And sometimes the rings are wide open and you can see them very well. And other times they're almost as flat as a line. And this year, that's where they are. So not a great time to see Saturn's rings. And the Galileo scopes, they had hoped to start sending them out much earlier than they did. I know, Larry, you said you got yours after ordering it. I actually ordered mine in February. I was number 107 on their order list of tens of thousands of people. And I only got mine a couple of weeks ago with the economy the way it was. It took a while for things to get going. They had hoped people would be able to look at Saturn. We'll have to wait a few months for that.
All right. And again, we will take your questions at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. You have to, you mentioned one or two web addresses. You have some other web addresses, Paul, that you think people ought to pay attention to?
Well, I mentioned a little while ago a nice website to go to. It's the official forum site for the International Year of Astronomy, and that's Cloudy Nights. Just do a search, one word, Cloudy Nights. All sorts of different forums, and they have reviews of telescopes, and they have articles. And we've been talking about Jupiter, I believe on the 19th of July. I'm a member of Cloudy Nights. You can join it. It's free of charge, and post if you want to. I've actually posted a few photos I've taken. On July 19th, an Australian astronomer named Anthony Wesley discovered a spot on Jupiter where something smacked into it. And he actually posted photos, some of his very first photos, an hour or two after he took them. He posted them at Cloudy Nights, where he's a member. And within days, the Keck telescopes in Hawaii and the Hubble were taking pictures of this spot. And the spot is still there. You couldn't see it through the Galileo scope, but through a larger amateur scope you could, although it's now spreading out. When we look at Jupiter, we're actually looking at its cloud tops. And the spot on Jupiter was material thrown up from down below when an object plummeted through the atmosphere, and that spot, the clouds are now tearing it apart and spreading it apart.
And that was discussed earlier on in an earlier show, and there may have been some misinformation there, or misstatement, I guess.
Yes. When an Australian newspaper broke this story the next day, they claimed that the object was the size of the Earth, and that was a mistake. The spot was about the size of the Earth, but it's like a splash in the ocean. The object, which the guest said was 1,000 kilometers across, the guesstimate now is it was several hundred meters across, so less than 1,000th that size. I've actually gotten a couple of emails from people saying, how could we not have seen something the size of the Earth? And, well, because it wasn't there. A few hundred meters across from this distance, they actually can see things almost that small, but they have to be looking for them. This was something that came in from out of the solar system. And as that guest said, Jupiter, Saturn, other planets, their gravity wells pull them in, and that's what happened. And nobody has seen a picture of the object, just a picture of what it left on Jupiter.
Okay, and so we never will get a picture of the object.
No, it's no longer there.
All right, so I'm glad to kind of get that straightened out a little bit, because there were, obviously that's quite a difference,
right.
When you start talking about size. Well, let's take some more calls here. Antonio in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, this is Antonio. Yeah, earlier I was listening to you guys talking about, I don't know if it was you specifically or not, but about this, collisions with rocks and asteroids and whatnot, meteorites, and how we as a human race would try to protect ourselves from this. And I think it's like a mute subject, isn't it?
Well, actually, no. And the guest talked a little bit about some of the things that are going on. There's a group called Space Watch, and there are telescopes on Earth. They're not very large telescopes yet. But 20 years ago, we knew about a few thousand asteroids orbiting the sun. And because, mainly because of another thing that hit Jupiter in 1994, Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9, it was discovered, and then months later, it plummeted into Jupiter, and it really showed us, it left a bunch of dark marks on Jupiter, and it really showed us just what kind of damage comets could do, or meteors, or asteroids. And Space Watch started as a result. We now know about, I think we're almost up to, it's a couple of hundred thousand or a hundred and some thousand asteroids. And as that guest said, we're sending building a bigger scope to look for even more. Scientists are working on ways to deflect them, and nuclear bombs would be a bad idea. If something's heading for Earth and it's one object and you blow it up into 100 objects, it's still heading towards Earth, and then you'll get plummeted, hit by hundreds of them. They are working on this. There are satellites that are in the works and some that are even on their way to visit asteroids to find out, well, what are they made of, how solid are they, to give us ideas of how to deflect them.
Oh, interesting. We've had some people call and wonder. You mentioned earlier the Galileo scope directions, or the directions for putting together the Galileo scope. And as I said, it was just looking at the directions that come with it. They're not the greatest in the world. We were able to put them together. But you said there's another website, and I actually went to that, and I've forgotten what the address is for that.
If you just Google, I don't know if it's the whole address, you can do a search for the International Year of Astronomy, and they'll have a link. I don't have the website right off, but or if you just do a Google search for galileoscope.org, that's most of the address, and it'll take you there. And somewhere on their website, there will be a link to a PDF document. It's 14 pages of instructions for putting it together, and you just can't go wrong then. They even now have one without any words. It's just all pictures showing you, so anyone in any language can figure out how do you put this together. And it's not that difficult. You just need somebody to point you, here's what you should do.
And the nice thing about them is, I think just for instructional purposes, they're easy to take apart.
That's right. There's no glue involved. It's all held together with pressure, you know, just pushing pieces together. It comes in. It's basically two halves that you put together, and then you push things on either end to hold it together. And that's done with both the main tube and with the eyepieces.
This month, President Obama will receive a major report from the U.S. Human Spaceflight Plans Committee about the future of space travel. What are your thoughts on space travel and our skies?
Well, I don't want to argue with the guest who was here earlier, but he also mentioned that NASA for 40 years has wanted a base on the moon. And I just wanted to sort of comment that my own thoughts and understanding is NASA does what it's directed to do. It's a government agency, and it needs leadership from the president and from Congress. And this commission was set up to sort of decide what's the goal? Why are we sending probes and people into space? So they've got a big job. This hasn't really been done since 1990 is the last time that a sort of overarching commission was put together. What are our goals? And it's my understanding that it's really kind of all over the place. There are some folks who say, yes, we should go to the moon. Simply to go to the moon. They've recently found that there's some, I believe it's helium-3 there that would be used in nuclear fusion plants. And there's very little of it on Earth, and it's something they're looking at. Other people say we should be heading for Mars. Other people are saying, well, maybe we need to decide why are we doing all this before we decide what to do, what is the goal. And I read an article just the other day about this, and there are five very sort of disparate different scenarios of what this report might include. So I find it fascinating that so much is up in the air and that, that no real decision has been made. I know President Bush put us on a track to go to the moon. There are some folks at NASA who think that we should possibly go to an asteroid instead. Even Buzz Aldrin is saying, you know, we've been to the moon. He's been to the moon. And that we should set our sights on Mars rather than putting our eggs in the basket of going back to the moon. So I hope we'll find out. This has kind of been put off and then put off again. And I hope by the end of the month we'll get some ideas.
In the meantime, we have the Galileo scope, and I want to come back to that just at the end for people who are maybe tuning in late. Explain why the Galileo scope and how people can get it and so forth.
Again, if you go to the International Year of Astronomy website or just galileoscope.org, it's a very inexpensive. Right now it's $15. On Monday, the price goes up to $20. A very inexpensive telescope designed for kids to put together, designed to show us what Galileo saw. And we need to remember that before him, our understanding of the universe was vastly different than it was just a few years later. You can see the moons of Jupiter. You can see the rings of Saturn. You can see craters on the moon. You can see stars in the Milky Way and many other things. For $20.
And one last thing, we've had several people call and wonder if you'd that Perseid trip or event in the last minute here, can you tell us about what to do there?
And if you don't, you know, if you don't come to this event, you can just go anywhere away from city lights, get as into as dark a sky as you can, bring something to lie down on, a lounge chair, a mattress, a sleeping bag, and just look at the sky, because these things are going to be all over the sky. There will be any place in the sky. But I'm going to be at the Trempealeau National Wildlife Refuge. And if you just do a Google search for that, you'll find their website. They'll have information about the event. Dr. Jennifer Anderson, a professor at Winona State University, she'll be leading the get-together. It starts at 7:30 p.m. on the 11th. Go to twitter.com/WSU Astronomy after 5 o'clock on Tuesday, just to make sure that we're going to do it, because if the weather is bad, we'll do it the next night.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Thank you so much for being with us today. Paul Kinzer of Galesville, Wisconsin. He has his own business called Seeing Stars, brings portable planetariums to schools and libraries, and is the author of Stargazing Basics: Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's a wonderful book published by Cambridge University Press. And we'll have him back, and we'll do this again. Appreciate him being with us. And thank you for listening. Tomorrow, Garden Talk, Laura Gell and Brian Huddleston, our guests. Stay with us.